It's Sal Capaccio.
Filling up right behind the Bills bench right now with their flags and their hey, 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 hey.
Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
Hey, 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 hey.
Let's go Buffalo chant.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Minicamp this week. So serious that it's mandatory. So unserious that the media get to watch the whole thing. Days running. Sal Capaccio with us on the Wesher Hotline. Sal, what were a couple highlights of the day?
Hi, guys.
Hi, Sal.
The highlights of the day would include a couple of really nice plays by the defense. I would say, first of all, though, before that happened, Josh Allen, after three interceptions yesterday, was really dialed in early on today. I don't think I saw a ball hit the ground in early 7-on-7 work. I mean, he was really firing it and looked really good. And then later on, though, defense started to kind of get their rhythm back a little bit. There was a pick six by Tre'Davious White. It was more really because Khalil Shakir slipped on a slant, and as he reached back, or up, I should say, it went off his hand. Trey got it, went down the sidelines. And then later, Dane Jackson did a great job to break on a ball. It was like, maybe a curl route of some sort for Keon Coleman, and just reached around and really did a great job to knock it out of the receiver's hands. So I'd say veteran DB day of, making plays was good. And then on the offensive side, I just really like what I see from Josh with Elijah Moore. And we're starting to see Josh Palmer heat up a little bit too. Now, you guys know this. I hope listeners know this, that, in these contexts of there's really no hitting, these guys, you're going to be very careful if you're going to make a play near the guy. You're going to go on the ball, but you're not really going to take the body. So all that's got to be in context, but I like what I'm starting to see more now from Allen and Palmer the last, today and yesterday.
You can't slip on a route and then lift your hand up. It's like two mistakes.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. Right?
No.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to be a tough instinct to deny.
Just let it go.
Just to let it go. But, maybe you volley that thing up in the air, you're in
guy,
big trouble.
Guy catches everything as it is. So I understand him making an effort. Right.
Probably thought he still had a good shot at it.
Let me get my hand on it. I can make the play.
Well, I want to ask this in a relatively unserious way because I recognize we're still in the mini camp phase on the calendar here. But Palmer and Moore, has what you've seen or heard from talking to players and coaches advanced any of your expectations for either guy or rearranged the pecking order you might expect at receiver?
Not really, because I've always expected Josh Palmer to be kind of in that top three. To me, it's Khalil Shakir, Keon Coleman, Josh Palmer. And then I have Curtis Samuel and Elijah Moore right below them. What's interesting to me, the guy I haven't brought up yet, I think here I am once again. I may start the Tyrell Shavers hype train again. Like last year, I was all about Tyrell Shavers. This guy just makes really good catches in practice all the time. And again today, there was one where I'll say this. I don't know what Max Harrison has to do to cover Tyrell Shavers because he, for the second week in a row, he had amazing coverage and Shavers still made a play on him, right? And it's like, I'm sure that this kid, there's a size difference, right? There's the length difference, I should say. And I'm sure Max Harrison is like, guys in college didn't do that when I had coverage on them like that. So I just think there's this group of receivers there that we're, going to see. Now, it's not like I haven't seen Curtis Samuel make plays. It's not that I'm ignoring him. But I don't talk about him much because I just think that it's kind of a non-discussion. He's on the team, right? I mean, it would cost quite a bit of money to not have him on the team. And it's not like he's not doing anything. He's out there. He's working. He's making some plays. So I just don't know how to parse it right now because of what I've seen from everyone else. But it has not changed my thought on where they fall because I just don't think that anyone's necessarily so much head and shoulders above because of this everybody eats mentality that they have and everybody's going to be a part of it.
Yeah, I wonder how much, if at all, that will change as we get into camp. And there's just more, it's every day you're there and, is more sort of cutting into, are he and Samuel in something of a timeshare? Is one getting favored over the other? That kind of thing. Personnel groupings with the ones, the two, whatever. I think that is going to be interesting to keep an eye on because I think Moore and Samuel are, it wouldn't surprise me I think both guys are on the team, but it wouldn't surprise me if one's playing time really depends on the other.
Agreed. And, I think there's a point about redundancy a little bit with some of these guys, Elijah Moore, Curtis Samuel, not Tyrell Shavers. He's a little bit different, right? Joshua Palmer. You know, there's some redundancy here with some of these guys and what they do, but, you know, they're all going to bring a little bit of a different skill set. So they're going to have to kind of figure out exactly what those are. And some are going to be better blockers than others. Some are going to work better in the slot than others. Even Khalil Shakir can kind of fall in that bucket. But I think we all recognize Khalil Shakir is kind of viewed a little bit differently in this wide receiver room. He's, for all intents and purposes, he's really WR1, you know, for this team. Maybe not a traditional guy, but there is a little redundancy there. And I think you have to kind of work through that and where you see these guys as well. I did mention Max Harrison. I don't want to bury any lead, but at the end of practice, the rookie first-round pick, he did come out of team drills, and he was getting looked at by head trainer Nate Breske, and they were looking at maybe what appeared to be his knee area. He was walking while they were talking, and they were pointing at it. They were walking. He was working something out. And then the horn blew to end practice, so everyone came inside. Normally in that situation, we'd watch out and say, okay, how much more does he do today? Mm-hmm. Does he go back in? Does he go inside? Well, he didn't do anything, but nobody did. And he went inside because everybody did. But he did walk in with Nate Breske, the head trainer. So we will have to wait for information on that tomorrow.
Oh, that is a pro move. Like a guy that people are there to watch carefully gets a little bit banged up. That's the end of practice. Let's get on. Let's wrap it up with Hairston. Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. You're back into Tyrell Shavers. Well, why not?
Yeah. Took you until week 18 to get paid off for that love last year. But right, the 69-yard touchdown against the Jets.
His only target.
First NFL touch. Right. Only touch all year, right?
His only target. Trubisky was the quarterback on that play, too. This is one like where I went to that Golden State-Cleveland NBA Finals game with Durant in Cleveland as my first NBA game. And like, all the stars on the court. I went down courtside with Mark Kestisher before the game, and it was an incredible game. I'm at, like, I can never go to another NBA game.
Right.
Because this is my one. Shavers, credit to him for continuing on with his career and not retiring with a 1-for-69 and a touchdown career stat line. I mean, pretty good. So earlier we were talking about how, as I'm sure you've been, you know, heard and maybe even discussed, the Bills being favored in every game.
A little bit of that, yeah, I did hear.
And you can't find all the individual games on like a FanDuel app yet, but you know, certain websites offer it. And Sal, it's even more that than you might think. Not only favored in all 17, but a 7-point or more favorite in 7 games, 4.5 or more in 13 of their 17 games. Clearly, all this stuff, including make the second round odds, championship game, Super Bowl, is obviously a reflection on them, but also the AFC East. And relatively speaking, I think what this reflects is, you know, objectively, people are just really down on the Bills' competition in this division. Like, maybe they're all teams that don't even finish above 500. Who knows? Do you think that maybe that's a little bit much to think that the Dolphins, Patriots, and or Jets are just kind of like, you know, going to roll over this year, to put it one way?
Maybe. I mean, maybe there's a little too much of that when it comes to those teams. But I understand the thought process of, I mean, who's challenging the Buffalo Bills right now in the AFC East, right? I mean, the Dolphins have kind of had their chance, been who they are, and I don't even know if people expect them to be any better than what they've been, given some of the changes they've gone through, the health of their quarterback, question marks there. The Jets could be, honestly, worse. I mean, they won 5 games, but they might be in full rebuild mode as they try to work through, you know, changing over their entire roster, front office, coaching staff, everything. And then the Patriots, I think everybody expects the Patriots to be better. But how much is better for them? What's their ceiling? I mean, really, the ceiling for the next best team in the AFC East might be 8 or 9 wins. And that is truly a gap. Then you throw in who the quarterback is for the Bills versus who the quarterbacks are. Then you throw in the fact that their toughest games on their schedule are really their home games. Like the toughest team they play at home, Philadelphia, Cincinnati, Baltimore, Kansas City. The road schedule isn't that daunting overall. And guys, I think it's also, Mike, you say an indictment on the AFC East. I agree. I think it's kind of an indictment on the AFC overall as the haves and have-nots. That's what you kind of have in the AFC, to be honest with you. Do we ever talk about any other teams other than Buffalo, Kansas City, Baltimore, and maybe Cincinnati being the class of the AFC. That's it. Like, there's never another team. It's going to take a surprise for another team to be up there.
Right. Houston was getting that sort of attention at this time last year, and now they're not. And, you know, there's reshaping a line there, and there's the loss of Tank Dell and Diggs if you want it. So they might be shuffling a little, but they also maybe just didn't ascend quickly enough, but maybe they still are possible to ascend. But I don't know. But yeah, it has been static here for a few years.
I mean, and even at the bottom of the conference, you know, you have the teams that you'd expect there, or at least, you know, kind of trending that way, and Cleveland's there, and maybe the Colts are there, or the Titans are there. So I just think that there's these teams that you know kind of where they fit in, either at the top or at the bottom. Then there's a whole bunch of middle that can go either way, and maybe the Chargers can jump up, maybe the Broncos can jump up. But those teams are also in the West against the Kansas City Chiefs. They're not in the AFC East. I just think the book is kind of being written here, and it doesn't have to be right on the East teams like you talked about. So for sure, it is striking to think the Bills are favored in every game right now. It is unbelievable they're favored by so much in so many of those games. The only thing left to do for this team is win the Super Bowl. That is really it. Not even get there. The only thing left is to win the Super Bowl. And this is kind of the life we're living. And I got news for everybody. They're not going to stop living it over the next several years. If the season ends the same way this year that it has the last several, and the Bills lose in the playoffs at home to the Chiefs, or if they lose in the playoffs on the road to the Chiefs or home to the Bengals, whatever, or if the Bills win the Super Bowl, guess what? We're having the same conversation here the exact same week next year.
Yes, except if they win, it's going to sound very different.
Right.
It might even be different voices. I don't know if right. they actually win, you know, the one before I die and all right. that.
Sal, do you have any sense? This is not a new thing. They've been this level of favorite. Although last year was not like this. Last year, the Jets were getting all the love in the summer, and were even, I think, when kickoff came for week one, the Jets were the favorite to win the division.
By a smidge.
By a bit, but yeah. Still. So it wasn't like the Bills were this, you know, unquestioned crown that they were wearing. How do you think, has anybody really talked about, like, what the end game here is, and what it's like living through a pro sports existence where all you are expected to do is win it all, which is the hardest thing to do, but that's the only thing that's going to satisfy everyone, and that's a really tough place. That's a tough way to live, I think. I mean, it's great, it's a compliment, yeah. But it is, I mean, there's no wiggle room, really.
No, I think you've probably gotten answers to that, Bulldog. If I think back to things that Brandon Bean has kind of said, or Sean McDermott has said recently, over the last couple of years, like, they know that, right? They know, but what their message always is you're going to keep, and I think Bean actually addressed this offseason, which is you're still going to keep swinging until you knock the door down. Like, that's what, it's the only thing you can do. It's the only thing you can do is keep swinging until you knock the door down. Yes, there is pressure there, but it's the pressure you live with. It's the pressure you created. It's the pressure you want. And it's the pressure you're kind of comfortable with now. I think, you know, being the team that, let's be honest, the quarterback who is the best who hasn't won it, the team who's been the best team that hasn't won it, and not just in football, maybe throughout sports this goes with the Buffalo Bills right now. Sure, there's a certain stigma to that and some sort of pressure that you want to pop the balloon and finally have that off your shoulders. There's no doubt. But I'll go back to what I said. No matter what they do this year, they'll have that same expectation next year. I don't want to sound like Mike Tomlin, right? He has created the saying, but it is the standard now. That's what it is. It's the standard. The standard is for this team to be... remember I just said a while ago, the one thing they haven't done is get to or win a Super Bowl? The one thing they haven't done on the way is get the one seed.
Right.
Right? Like, that's still a goal that they have not achieved in this era. They have not been the one seed. And what the one seed gets you is that week off, and then you play one game in order to host the AFC Championship game the next week. And I know that happened last year. I know last year they were at home, and they went on the road. They've been to the AFC Championship game. They have not done that. They have not been to that point. And that is the one thing that they are still swinging for.
I mean, last year was especially cruel in that respect. Because really, you couldn't ask for anything more from them.
But it was never really a race.
But, well, it was okay. Like, it was, they never caught up. Like, they,
right.
they're sitting there at beating Kansas City at 11-2 or something, and they're still back, and they Kansas City just threw these kind of lucky, unimpressive wins against terrible teams sometimes, just would not lose a game. And it's not hard. I mean, maybe I'd be biased. It's not hard to imagine the Bills getting there had they been at home. I know they lost the year before, but, mm-hmm. you know, last year's team was better. Like, it's not hard at all to imagine that. It's hard to imagine them beating Philadelphia, maybe. I also wouldn't imagine them getting blown out. The Chiefs were just not that good. So that's been especially cruel. The Chiefs go on the road the year before and run through the Bills and the Ravens, and just, I know it's a lot. Earlier on this same kind of subject, like thinking about the Bills and the division games, I asked Bulldog, like, would you take 5-1 against the AFC East? And he's kind of like, you kind of have to, maybe.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't take 4-2. Baltimore might take 4-2 in its division with what the Bengals are, and they always lose one game to Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And Kansas City, I don't think Kansas City would take it in the same way, but that division's tough. I mean, that's three playoff teams, and now the Raiders have done a lot. So I think 4-2 in the AFC West isn't bad for Kansas City this year. So last year was especially cruel in that one seed context. This year, maybe, you know, it breaks right.
I think if you're looking at Kansas City, there is a element of, okay, you think the Chiefs could kind of drop back a little bit because of, you know, just the Chiefs and attrition and things like that. And we've seen a little bit of that, even though it didn't come to fruition last year. They were in all those close games and they wound up winning in the end. But I do think that's the difference between the two divisions and the two teams. Even if you feel that way about the Bills, even if someone goes, okay, attrition, they've had some changes, the difference is there's not teams on the rise that
right.
can contend.
Who's going to get them? Right.
Like
right.
in the West, right? Again, maybe New England can be better, but how better? The Broncos have a really good roster, guys. The Broncos have a really good roster. They have a really good offensive line. They have a lights-out defense. They have a quarterback, a rookie that looked really good last year. You know, like that's a team that can put together, you know, maybe a season that, okay, we're talking about them challenging here. I don't know, but, you know, they're going to be kind of thought of that way at times probably. And then you have the Chargers, and there's Justin Herbert, and the guy that everyone has anointed as the guy that just needs to show that he's so capable because we know he's so capable. And you have Jim Harbaugh coaching him. So I'm going to talk about the Raiders. I don't think they're that team right there. There's some people beat Carroll's back. We'll see. But I do think the Chargers and Broncos represent so much more different
yeah.
in that division than what the Bills have anything else representing against them in the East.
Boy, it's got to be a really massive year for Herbert. Second year with that coach, all the attention, him being sort of maybe prematurely placed on the tier with Allen and Jackson and Mahomes. Like I was doing that when talking about really it was the AFC West. It's going to get so strong. He's got these quarterbacks. And he just has not really come through. And like he's not going anywhere. I don't mean like they're going to move on if it doesn't go well, but eventually, mm-hmm. people are just going to start relegating him to, like, he's like, just whatever. Top of the second tier is the best he's going to be, maybe, unless he breaks through. And it's high time.
It is high time.
Yeah, and I also don't know, like, what their offense is and how they kind of operate in this 2025 world of NFL football, right? I mean, Jim Harbaugh kind of operates and acts like a guy that still wants to play like he's coaching a Big Ten in the team in the 1970s, right? And we just came from Michigan, but yeah, they let mm-hmm. Justin Herbert throw a little, you know, getting the offensive lineman and running the ball. And, you know, I kind of get confused a little bit about who exactly they are because you do have this quarterback that I think has so much talent not playing for the Cincinnati Bengals as they want to do. And he's not playing, you know, for a quarterback, a coach that I think wants to drop him back and put him in shotgun and just spread the ball around and throw it all over the field all the time.
Yeah, it's been alluded to here. The AFC West is four Hall of Fame coaches.
Right.
It's amazing.
It's going to be four Hall of Fame
all
coaches.
All four coaches have either won a Super Bowl
or
a national championship.
That's right.
That division.
Harbaugh has a Super Bowl loss and a national championship. Mm-hmm. Carroll has both wins in both. If the USC yes. thing wasn't rebuked or whatever, I'm not sure about that one. And, you know, Peyton, great career. Sean McDermott, he gets one, then we'd talk about the Hall of Fame. I think he might have to get one.
Me too.
Or, you know, a coach can...
Yeah, I think that's probably right.
A coach can go somewhere else and kind of rebuild it, like in the Parcells mode. Parcells has rings. But, you know, a guy that goes to a different program someday and brings it from the ashes, get a lot of respect for that.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I mean, Marv Levy went to four. It's different, but he never won one. He's in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
Right?
But that's extraordinary to do that. Like, that is probably the thing. If you go to four Super Bowls, period, lose them all, you probably got to look at it. Four in a row is like, all right, this guy's in the Hall of Fame. This is easy. Right. Right? So I think you're going to want to get one if you want to really, I think, seriously consider McDermott.
I won't say Marv is undeserving, but it's a little bit generous. You know, like, it's not a kind of a career history where you're like, oh, obviously, you know, like a Parcells or somebody like that. I don't think of him as undeserving, but, you know, kind of a weak era, and the four in a row piece made that special.
Yeah.
And, you know.
That's what I'm saying. Without it, I don't know.
Without it, well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's debatable. It's debatable. All right, Sal, so tomorrow is what? And after tomorrow is what? Vacation?
So, yeah, tomorrow is a practice at 11 a.m., Now, they've gone from 12:30 to 2:30 each day. Do they go 11 to 1?
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses. Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Tomorrow, I'm not quite sure. Maybe they do. Maybe they get the guys out a little bit early. And I believe, as of right now, I believe we may be hearing from Brandon Bean tomorrow just to kind of wrap up, you know, mini camp and look ahead to the next 5-6 weeks. And from there, you know, I asked Sean McDermott yesterday, what's your message to the guys when they leave here this week? Because we're not going to talk to him. And, you know, he said everybody kind of learns a little bit differently throughout their career how they have to take care of their bodies. And the best teacher is really your teammate. And people have been through it before. And you got veterans who have a routine, he said. They've just had a routine. They know what to do. You have those guys have been in a few years and maybe still figuring out their routine, but they kind of get a handle on what they like, what they don't like. And then you have young guys who, this is their first time. And okay, what do I do now? Do I go, you know, just full throttle and rest? Get ready for, get ready for camp and go, I'm going to be in the best shape. And then, you know, burn yourself out and hopefully not get injured, obviously, anything like that. Or do you just take a time off and go, hey, I'm kind of laying on the beach for 5 weeks because I'll be ready when I'm ready. I think you have to figure that out, no doubt about it. You want to make good decisions. You know, that's you hear Andrew Brandt, who, you know, on Twitter, he always says it's the worst time of year for any executive or head coach because you get a phone call at night because something happens, your players aren't with you, and where are they? What are they doing? Things like that. But what happens is, guys, they'll break. And then let's remember, the NFL calendar is a little early this year, right? Everything, because of the actual calendar we live by, everything kind of happens a little bit earlier this year. So last year, July 24th was the first training camp practice. If you take the exact number of days in the CBA to the game and back it up to practice when it's allowed, I think we're looking at maybe the 23rd this year. So that would be just about, what, 5-6 weeks, whatever. But it looks like that'll be right around the report date for training camp. Or I'm sorry, first practice report date would be the day before.
McDermott's message condensed. Sun's out, bums out. Let's go. We'll see you back here in 5 weeks. All right, Sal, we'll talk tomorrow. Thank you.
You got it, guys. Thanks a lot.
That's our dude, Sal Capaccio, on the Western Hotline. His appearances are brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
Talk some more about that expectations point. living in a world where the Super Bowl is really the only, to put it one way, successful season. It really should be discussed, and it has been and will be again. 803-0550 for your thoughts. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here, WGR.
So I think the Buffalo Bills are the best team in the AFC. I think they're so unbelievably deep. I think the Chiefs are about as weak as they've been in the last several years. Bengals don't scare me the way they used to. Ravens, I think, are still definitely up there, but Buffalo would be the team for me, I would say, leads the pack right now in the AFC. Philadelphia, I still think, is the team that leads the pack in the NFC. I don't like that because they just won the Super Bowl. We know the hangover is real, but Philadelphia, man, that offense just doesn't really have a solution, right? They've got too much talent. They use all four downs. It's very hard to slow that train. Obviously, they lose offensive coordinator Kellen Moore, and they have a play caller change, but that's kind of a self-perpetuating machine at this point. Just kind of spam the A.J. Brown button, spam the Saquon button, do a tush push. We got 30 points on the board.
Benjamin Solak visiting with One Bills Live today.
He liked Houston. I heard a good chunk of that on my way in. And sort of that's why that might have come through when we were talking to Sal about the AFC. And I mentioned Houston, like they were, I was pushing back against it last year at this time. Like they're so good. Like, it's a little quick.
You're right. They did win their division.
They did win their division. But they weren't at that level. But this guy thinks like, well, but it still was a good year. Like, just because they didn't take that step, maybe that step comes this year, even though, you know, there are losses there.
You know, speaking of expectations and framing them, was it a good year for Houston? Say that's us. The year before, Stroud is the offensive rookie of the year. You did it. You got rid of Deshaun Watson, and you got your new franchise guy. And you're in a weak division that you should waltz through. They still were in a weak division that they were able to waltz through, but they lost 7 games. They were no match for Kansas City or Baltimore in the end. And so what? Would we have been happy with that? No.
In year two of C.J. Stroud? Like year two of Josh Allen?
In year two of C.J. Stroud, after in year one, I did the same thing. Won the division, won a playoff game, and then lost to the Ravens. So I didn't make any progress last year. No. My offense was way worse.
Yeah, well, that's probably the more concerning thing than like the actual results. I mean, I know the results are what end up mattering in the standings and the seedings and all the stuff. But that they seemed like they lost their way on offense. And, you know, there'll be a new guy there now, and, you know, we'll see if he can reestablish that for them. But man, I think in total, would I be happy with that? Am I coming off the Deshaun Watson situation? Because I think the honeymoon is still going on there. I don't think last year, for certainly this isn't going to be across the board, but if I'm working in Houston, sure, I would have liked to have taken a step, but it seemed like the whole thing was a bit of a rush to me. And just give it some air. You're fine. Let's just keep going. And being clear of the Watson thing and it turning as quickly as it did for them by finding their way to Stroud would mean I'm nowhere near yet. It's going to be another 2 years, for me anyway, before I'm, when are you going to do something? Because I thought they might be buried for a decade. You know, you had what looked like a generational talent on par with Mahomes and Allen, and it unraveled in a disastrous,
scandalous.
Yeah, awful. And you're just, I'm embarrassed, but this is horrible. And here comes Stroud. Oh, it's a new day. I think I'm still riding the wave of the new day, even though the result was the same as the year before. I think I'm okay here. This year is pivotal for that, though. Like you gotta keep growing here. Otherwise, you might start to look like the Bengals of the Marvin Lewis era or something, and nobody wants that. So, but I don't think I'd be frustrated yet if I were a Texans fan, because the context matters. You know, like I just it. it they found their way to another guy, and like that's amazing. They didn't wait 17 years, waiting from Jim Kelly to Josh Allen. They got another guy right away.
I guess maybe that comes down to whether you think Stroud is like just locked in as one of these players. You just said to Sal about Herbert how you might have gotten over your skis on Herbert.
Yeah,
and this sounds like, well, I'm kind of all set now, unless Stroud gets into some scandal and then that just right. sort of breaks in half all at once. But I don't know. Last year would have been frustrating to me. You and I could have had some, could have gone 10 rounds a few times on the Texans because I didn't get better. Like, I had a coordinator that was interviewing for jobs. So I feel like, that's kind of Brady maybe, where next year, if we're good again, he's gone. That was Bobby Slowick, who came up through PFF. Instead, they couldn't throw the ball. They couldn't protect their quarterback. They had a couple big injuries. I mean, that's not to be sloughed off. Nico Collins missed 5 games after he got hurt, scoring a touchdown against the Bills. That long play, it was it for Nico Collins for like 5 weeks. Diggs had the ACL. Tank Dell had a gruesome injury. Like, you did have challenges, but I went the wrong way. And I got in because my division is garbage. And then, beat the Chargers. That was good. Then lost in Kansas City. It didn't grow. It didn't improve. And that's what you want to see. So I think the pressure's on in Houston because, Watson's ancient history to me now. And maybe I'm too harsh there. But now what are we talking about all the time for Houston? It's the rookie deal point. With Stroud,
Right.
Got him on the rookie deal, load up. Did they do that? They signed Nick Chubb. And they drafted 2 receivers on day 2.
No, this is good. I would not at all. I would just forgive last year. I don't think they're on easy street. Like they have to, I think, progress. And show that they belong there. And Stroud specifically, the Herbert point is a good one. Because why did I think it was a rush? I mean, it just. What, you're just going to show up and you're at that level? Like, I'm just going to... Because we've seen guys like Mahomes do that, although he did sit a year. It's important maybe to remember that in this context. But still, as soon as he got on the field, he was great. And that's what Stroud looked like, but I just didn't really think it was all the way there. So I think they do have a lot to prove this year. So I'm trying to say 2 things here.
It's really...
Last year's forgivable. This year, you're kind of on the spot.
Sal made the point, we all know it, the tier 1 in the AFC is those 3 teams. And whether you're the Chargers or the Texans or anybody else, big whoop if you're in the next tier or at the top of the next tier. Because really, again, we're Houston, what do we need to see? They beat Buffalo, but we need to see you look like you're good enough to beat, you need to beat those teams. Not just beat the Jaguars twice.
Right.
You need to beat the Chiefs and the Ravens and the Bills. With the exception of that Bills win last year that was very early in the season, they got late in the season. They lost to Kansas City twice. They lost to Baltimore on Christmas 31-2 at home. It's just like they didn't belong on the field. So this is all easy to say. How do you do it? Show me how you do it. What's the blueprint? How am I going to beat Kansas City? The Bills can't even beat Kansas City in the end. So how is Houston supposed to be able to do it? Like, what am I asking for?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is just your life.
Right.
The Chargers and the Texans and whoever else. Maybe this is just your life. Better enjoy it.
It would make sense if somebody from that group of teams ascended. Not to like, the one seed necessarily, but to 12 wins. And, whether it's the Chargers or the Broncos in the West, I think you got to be Houston, maybe Jacksonville, but they're coming from a further away place and a new coach, some new systems and all that. I like the talent, but we'll see. I don't want to rush that, but I'm pretty bullish on them. But somebody besides the Bills, the Ravens, and the Chiefs, maybe that's the Bengals sort of reclaiming, but even they have been on that tier before. It's kind of weird that there hasn't been another you know, I don't want to say super team, but just another powerhouse looking team. And maybe this is a year we get one with year two with the Chargers and Peyton with year two with Knicks now, year three overall. Maybe it all comes together for somebody. I don't know.
We should hope not.
Yeah, well, I
New England is in there.
I kind of hope so, because if it's the Chargers or the Broncos, maybe somebody displaces the Chiefs.
Yeah, maybe. It doesn't have to be, you know, again, nonlinear, right? It doesn't have to be from that those teams. That it's sort of a point people make about the Bills. Like, we're kind of sick of you just knocking on the door,
mm-hmm.
right? Don't talk to me until you can actually break through. And Houston, L.A., that's my attitude about them. Like, just don't bore me. Maybe a team like New England, perish the thought, if May is good, a real coach, lots of new pieces, a pretty easy schedule. You never know with these things.
Right.
You never know with the window, right? The window can be 20 years because your quarterback is that good, or it can be two. Because just like it was more of a fluke than you thought, and your the best teams in your area are just better. So who knows?
And it can open sooner too. And that's the point about New England.
Yeah.
It could.
Doesn't have to be a ramp up.
Right.
It can just sort of happen.
The Bills did ramp up, obviously, right? 19 was progress from Allen's rookie year. They made the playoffs and lost. 20, when 20 started, I was not thinking about the Super Bowl. It took like 6 or 8 weeks of the season for me to go, oh, okay, yeah, okay, I think they could do it.
Right.
Like when they beat Seattle here or something in that 20 season, it was like, oh, okay, you know, no, this is real. And, you know, so New England, they haven't had that ramp up, but that doesn't mean they couldn't have that year. We talked their schedule through a couple of weeks ago, and 6-2 to start was not dreamy. It was pretty realistic.
It's just that they have a Buffalo problem. Which the Bills did not have an AFC East problem.
That's right.
In 2020. 803-0550 to comment. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR. Welcome back. We'll get back to the Bills and expectations coming up after the 5 o'clock update. Talked a little baseball earlier. Max Scherzer will be pitching for the Bisons on Friday at home. Great that it's at home. Great that it's a Friday evening. Hopefully the rain holds off as, you know, maybe it will. Doesn't sound like this forecast is too serious.
It's light rain in the evening, so it, you know, maybe it'll even miss. Who knows?
That'd be great. And while we were talking, quote, baseball, we brought up Bruce the Bat Dog, who apparently is a dog that fetches bats at games in Rochester, and he's been called up to their parent club, Washington, which is funny. Fun and funny. Yahoo refers to Bruce the Bat Dog as a prospect. I like that.
Wow.
Didn't mention that earlier. Prospect.
Yeah, that's I get that. That's nice.
That is nice.
I got to check my app and see what the MLB Network, if there is a game on MLB Network tonight, and is it the Nationals?
And will the announcers be there?
and will they show the Bat Dog? I mean, you're not doing it right if you don't feature the Bat Dog in some way. I don't need Bat Dog cam or anything. Okay, I don't need it every inning, but you're gonna want to get that on the broadcast.
I think that's like later in the week.
Oh, okay.
They're at the Mets tonight.
Oh, all right.
And tomorrow. They're home Friday to Miami.
All right.
So one could be at the Bisons game watching Scherzer. Another could be watching the Nationals and Bruce the Bat Dog.
At the same time.
At the same time. Maybe I'll be watching
on
that from my seat at the ballpark.
On your phone.
If I get it. I doubt I even get it. Have you been? You haven't been to Washington for a game.
No, right? I have not.
It's okay.
No.
I like it. Pretty chill. I've been to maybe three or four games at Nats Park. It's not like, it's by the Navy Yard. It's not like right in Washington. I mean, of course, maybe, because where are you going
to
build it?
It's next door to the Lincoln Monument.
It's not It's not like where you're looking at.
It's on the National Mall.
I think maybe you can see the Capitol from the Navy Yard, right. But you don't exactly get the best view of the city.
Right.
Which is, I don't mean that as a criticism. It's my favorite American city, Washington.
I have not been since I was a teenager to D.C. Kirsten and the boys went for a march, I think during COVID, after maybe the Miami high school shooting or something. They went to a big national march, a rally, and I did not go. So I've not set foot in D.C. in 40 years or more.
You didn't support the cause?
No, it's not. It was not that. It was just simply.
Somebody's got to stay back.
Yeah, I mean, you know, dog care, whatever. I stayed back. I actually had a great weekend, if I remember correctly.
I mean, I love a lot of places, but okay. But Washington is special because as you're driving in over the Potomac, there it is. What doesn't happen in Washington is what has happened in Toronto, where you just get downtown, you can't see anything. It's just build. You're so walled in.
Yeah.
By all the construction constantly. I mean, it's just, you can't see the Rogers Center on the Gardner until you're next to it now. And I can remember when they built, 1989, when they built it, going up there for the first time with my father and a couple of friends to see the A's, like 92. Oh, I was in awe. And of course, the CN Tower.
But a long time, you could see them both when you came. Oh. There was a moment where you come around the bend and like there's the CN. Well, you see the CN Tower for a while, but the both of them right next to one another.
The dome was like huge there.
Yeah.
And yes, like there it is. Like that's when you're going to a destination anywhere, like that, the moment where you can see it. And then in Toronto, it was like well before you got there. And now you don't even know it's there until you're next to it. It's right. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And the CN Tower from, you know, a few miles out, there it is. Barely, because most of it's blocked. Like, it's just,
right.
You don't really have that moment anymore driving into Toronto. And Washington, that never changes. They don't build higher than the monument. So right, it's always right. Like, just there it is, splashed in front of you, the best. We will take a break and get back to sports. How about that idea? I know you're thinking it. That's what you came here for. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, this is WGR.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.
Whether you're on the go or at the ballpark, T-Mobile is built to keep you connected wherever the game takes you. With America's best network, you know your phone is going to work, even in a crowded stadium, for instance. If you lose track of your friends, after a long seventh-inning stretch, one quick message and a shared location later, you'll find each other without missing the next pitch. And you can upload the video of the game-winning hit and share it before you even leave your seat. And on the days you can't make it to the ballpark, streaming the game on the go feels just as electric. No buffering, no interruptions, just every moment as it happens. Find out how baseball hits different with T-Mobile at T-Mobile.com/MLB. Fastest based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data of national speed score results for the second half of 2025. best based on analysis by Ookla of the speed test intelligence data for the second half of 2025.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.